Now to the myth and mash of the extinct Haast's eagle, or Tihokioi bird. It's the largest eagle ever known to have existed. Over the centuries, its existence was questioned. Was it real or was it just legend? Scientists have pored over what was known about the bulky bird and debated whether it was able to fly. In his new book, Hard by the Cloud House, Peter Walker examines the legend of Tihokioi and its part in the avian history of Aotearoa. Kia ora, Peter.
Morning.
I'm truly struggling with my reo on the pronunciation of this bird. It's a bit of a tongue twister for me.
I think it is for me too. I don't have very much to reo, but it's the onomatopoeic name. That's an attempt to give the cry that it uttered.
Well, do the cry for me then, Peter.
I'm not going to go there, no. We'll go with the other name. There's another name, Puakai.
Yes.
An older name, probably.
That's right. I saw that one yesterday and had more practice at that. Sometimes they are tongue twisters as any language can provide. What piqued your interest in the Haast's eagle?
Well, I was interested in that. I was amazed by what I found out about it, which wasn't very much, and I was amazed that I didn't know more, because it seemed to me, the more I looked, to be an extraordinary creature. I mean, as you just said, it was by far the largest eagle that ever flew, certainly the largest bird of prey human beings ever met, but it seemed sort of no one knew much about it or even cared much about it. Even in Maori legend, it seemed to have a sort of obscure position. It didn't feature in any of the great legends that I'd read, and I thought, well, this is very odd. And so I started looking into the matter, and it got more and more interesting. And then I read a very erudite essay by a retired professor of Islamic studies in London. And he, in 2009, I think about the same time that scientists absolutely decided this bird did exist and was a true flying predator, he came out with a very well-argued theory that this was also the bird that started to emerge about the 11th century in Islamic legends. And the best-known version is Sinbad and the Great Roc, the terrifying bird that lives on a beautiful, lonely, empty land. And, I think carries Sinbad away at one point. And New Zealand was also the only place in the world by the late medieval period where it was uninhabited. So there were lots of things that fitted in to, as plausible, to make his theory plausible, I mean. So I started following it.
Yeah, so let's get in your journey with you. First, how did it get its European name, although mainlanders won't find this too difficult to answer, but how did it get the European name of Haast's eagle?
Oh, well, Haast was the sort of mighty scientist in the very early colony, Canterbury colony. He was building the first museum. He was a geologist and a man of all trades, but in scientific, very, very highly thought of. And he was on the team that found it. It wasn't actually found by him, but by his taxidermist, a man called Frederick Fuller. But for some reason, it became known as Haast's eagle, rather unfair on poor old Fuller. But and then it also got a name, the scientific name, Harpagornis, meaning, what does it mean? The great grappling hook bird, Harpagornis. So its claws were so huge as it was like a grappling hook. Harpagornis murii, after a landowner called George Moore, on whose land it had been found, the first claw.
Can you describe this bird physically? What's been documented about its size?
Well, it's various. The range is the highest weight estimate I ever heard was 18 kilos. Generally, people come down a bit lower now. It's hard to know what condition the bird was in or could change its weight. You know, it might have just had a feed on a mower. But I think probably about 14, 15 kilos, wingspan about the same as the golden eagle, because wingspans can't get much larger because the blood won't go out further out to the wingtips after about 12 feet, as I understand it. The crucial fact is actually, I once had a golden eagle on my arm at a falconry centre. It was completely terrifying and it seemed huge. And that the upper limit, weight limit of a golden eagle is 4.5 kilos. So the New Zealand eagle was at least four times that size. Oh, sorry, not at least, but at least three times, maybe up to four times that size.
Despite its bulk, it could fly?
Absolutely. That's what they discovered quite late, I think about 2008 or 2009. They finally were able to do, there was new scientific techniques available, and they could tell from CAT scans, computerized axial tomography, I think it is, and they could get into the hidden inner structures of the bone and see that the openings for the nerves were so large that the wings were very powerful and it could definitely fly and it could definitely kill with its equally powerful claws. And so before that, there were theories it was kind of like a vulture that just lived on dead moa or dead anything. But once they saw that particular, it's called a foramina, I think, the hole in the bone structure, they knew at that moment that it was a mighty hunter and could certainly kill human beings, as Maori legend had said. So that was the headline I saw in the press one day. Maori, I was in London, and I saw this headline, Maori legend of man-eating bird is true. And that piqued my interest as well.
So the whakatauki of a giant eagle attacking moa and carrying away small children even, those doubts absolutely cast aside when these bones are discovered. And discovered where?
This is in, well, they're all, it's, they were found in quite a few places. The first claw to be discovered by European scientists was in North Canterbury. There's a debate. There might have been some found in the South Taranaki coast. Scientists today all discount that. I'm not sure that they're right. I think there were probably outlier populations occasionally nesting in the North Island, straight across Taranaki Bight. But mostly lived in the South Island, and skeletons have been found from the Obelisk Range and Otago. The great breakthrough was a giant female known as the Mount Owen female, and she was in a cave on the top of Mount Owen up in northwest South Island near Nelson.
Where then was it known to live in New Zealand?
We know it definitely lived in the South Island, and probably in quite good numbers. I mean, it's speculated that its hunting range was about 100 or 50 square miles. They don't really know. And there could have easily been several thousand pairs at any one time. And it lived in New Zealand for about a million years. So there were a lot of birds, but very few bird skeletons survive, especially out in the open. I think they've found fragments of about 70 of these birds. Well, that was the last time I looked, and there possibly have been more since.
And how old? How far back do the oldest ones date?
I'm not sure of that. I think the figures I generally hear are about 12,000 years. I think the Mount Owen female might have been there only 2,000 years. As I say, they don't survive very well. A bird dying outside might go into a sort of rock crevice and last there a few centuries.
One, interestingly, that is in the Canterbury Museum, I think, was found at the Wairo Bar. Of course, one of the oldest sites, Māori sites, and sites in New Zealand, sites of human settlement in New Zealand.
Yes.
Used by Māori to make holes in a seal skin, one of the very few objects made from the bone of a puakai, or I'm going to have
yes.
another go, or a te.
Yeah.
There we go, getting there.
Yes.
So do we know who the bird was related to, the eagle was related to?
Yes, oddly enough, it was a great surprise because people speculated that this gigantic man-killing eagle must be related to the nearest large eagle. I think it's the Australian wedge-tailed, which is much smaller. I think it's about 6 kilos. But it turns out that it was closest relations were the two very smallest eagles, the little eagle and the little booted eagle. And so it's, which I think are endemic in Australia. And so the theory is it blew over in a bushfire thermal or a storm, or possibly, I mean, obviously two blew over, or it's just possible that one blew over because a pregnant female apparently can have chicks that interbreed if the fathers of the different eggs are different enough genetically. So the two tiniest eagles in the world produced this monster in only a million years of evolution, which is incredibly fast, they say.
Let's talk a little about the myth aspect, because obviously, as we said, the oral history and the whakatauki and of Māori had been treated with scepticism, put it that way. They were proved correct. But what would you say about the sort of mythology that did grow up around this eagle before confirmation of its existence, acceptance of its existence?
Well, it had an interesting place in Maori mythology in another sense, that it was seen, I mean, probably quite a few people know about this, and I knew about this, that during the land wars in New Zealand in the 1860s, Tainui had a newspaper which they called Te Hokihoi. Again, I'm having trouble. Because it had this role as a bird that was never seen but only heard at night, and its cry was a sign that war was coming. And there was a great, there's a famous haka or song, possibly composed by Te Rapraha, who had the same message in there, war is coming. That was much earlier. That was a war with another tribe in the 1820s. So it did have this kind of distinct role as a kind of warning of war. Other than that, over time, I think as it became less of a threat, because it was a very, people were very scared of it. I mean, the most detailed legend is about a group of people, Waitaha, early inhabitants of the South Island, living in terror of this bird, and a hero called Tiho o Taura came and saved them by trapping it in some way.
Well, you could imagine if it was, you know, big enough to have prey of the size of moa and potentially even small children, you can certainly understand the fear that it would induce.
Absolutely. I mean, it would have no inhibitions about attacking a... If it killed 250-kilo moa, why not kill a nice, you know, strange new bipedal stranger wearing a moa skin cloak who weighs, what, 100 kilos? Why not? It would be easy for it. And we don't have any human bones. We certainly have moa bones, huge pelvis bones with the hole that exactly fits a giant claw. So they could attack with great force.
Peter Walker, our guest, on his book Hard by the Cloud House, which examines the legend of Te Hokihoi, the Haast's eagle, extinct Haast's eagle. 20 to 12 on 9 to Noon. Your book's been described as creative non-fiction. How did you go about not just the research, but telling the story in Hard by the Cloud House?
Well, I tended to just tell the readers what I knew, where I started, and how I discovered more. I take them along for the ride, really. There was a lot of research, and I travelled. I went off. I was living in London when this idea first came to me, and I read about Honeycomb Hill in the northwest of South Island, about 20K north of Karamea, and I suddenly got into my head that I must go there. And so I went there and then met some people. I met a marvellous figure called Phil Wood of Phil Wood's Menswear in Westport, who actually found one of the first bones that had been found for a long time. And he was convinced it was of great importance. And he ran into a wall of scepticism, scientific disinterest, really. So he was a very interesting figure to meet. And so I carried people along with the journey, and then I read this essay, which I referred to by another man in his 80s, a very fine writer called Professor Beaver, who put this eagle into the sort of space-time of West Asian mythology, pre-Islamic, and it slotted into what he knew about Arabic voyaging, sea voyaging. By this time, they were in charge of the sea route, the trade between China and India, and were sailing, often being blown out into the Pacific. So it wasn't implausible that a ship could have eventually reached these islands and even get back again by the 12th century.
So this geographical journey spans Aotearoa, New Zealand, China, and the Middle East.
Middle East, India. Yes, I think I cast my net out very wide.
What do we know about its demise? It became extinct, I think, around 1445. Do we know why?
Well, I think that, I mean, the standard scientific theory, and it's a good one, is that it lost its food. The moa wiped out probably within about 150 years of humans arriving, and that was dinner for this eagle. But there's some doubt about this. I mean, as I mentioned, von Haas, a very reliable observer, and he was more and more convinced that he saw one. And he saw two in completely different times and places, but deep in the Southern Alps. This is in the 1860s. And his taxidermist, you know, these were two avian authorities. They both saw it. And a third man, a settler called Matthias, who was sort of very solid and reliable. And so it's possible there was a sort of remnant population which had followed the kiwi, for example, into the crepuscular night, was living hunting by twilight. And why not? I mean, there was a lot more, apart from moa, there was a lot of bird life. And an eagle could live on smaller prey, I think. It's just possible. And there's one other sighting in the West Coast by someone else, I can't remember his name now. It's possible it was still around in the early or late 19th century. I don't know.
What a wonderful way to finish an interview. Few authors would say that. We don't say those words enough, Peter.
Yes, much to be said for not knowing.
Well, much to be said for recognising it and admitting it. Thank you very much. But might be the title of your next book. I'd read it.
Good thought. Thank you, Catherine.
Peter Walker, Hard by the Cloud House, is his book, examining the legend of Te Hokioi, the extinct Haast's eagle.